Hi, and welcome to Technotopia, a podcast about a better future. I'm John Biggs. Today on the show, we have David Fine, a writer and thinker on the future of cities. This is Technotopia. Technotopia is brought to you by Happy Fun Corp. Happy Fun Corp is a design-driven technology company in Brooklyn, New York that specializes in building mobile and web applications for startups and Fortune 500 companies. Whether it's a new mobile or web application that will help people experience the internet in a fun new way, or software that will interface with a new piece of top-secret hardware, Happy Fun Corp is always up to the challenge. Big or small, Happy Fun Corp loves building software and loves working with great people. Come build with them. HappyFunCorp.com. Welcome back to Technotopia, the podcast about a better future. I'm John Biggs. Today we have David Fine. He's a writer, speaker, and thinker on the future of cities. So, David, you did a interesting three-part series, Civic Technology and the Cities of Our Future. And you've been thinking a lot about cities and how they're changing, and we wanted to talk a little bit about that. So, as you recall, Technotopia is about the good stuff that's going to happen. So, if there's anything horrible that you predict, then we'll do that for the other podcast. Horrible techno dystopia. I guess we should make that one too.
All right, I'll try to keep it optimistic today.
Perfect.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. It's a wonderful podcast, and it's really kind of exactly what it was that I was writing about when I published a series of posts the cities of our future and how it is that we're going to grapple with them as they grow, become more complicated, and to a certain extent, hopefully more advanced. So what does that look like when we start building a connected society, connected future, and how is that going to, getting down to the meat and potatoes of it, going to really change the way that we do things on a government and business level?
Mm-hmm. So the concepts that you bring up here are fairly interesting. The old ways of doing things. I think one of the graphics here was interesting specifically. It was basically the idea of you had expensive taxis, you had expensive drivers who would drive people around, and there was a one-way interaction. But now you have services like Uber, for better or worse, that are changing the way the riders interact with the drivers, because the riders actually become the drivers, which is kind of unusual. And you're also suggesting that we can take this out into a city government level, and instead of having one-way transactions, driver, taxi, human, you have multi-way transactions. You have multi-connected transactions thanks to new technology.
Exactly. And if you really go back and think about the way that government services have been provided, at least in the United States, for quite some time, it's been very sequential. The government has a service like picking up the trash, for instance, and they then hire a contractor to fulfill that service, and the citizens are the eventual user or customer of the government. Mm-hmm. But they're not really part of that equation. And what we're seeing now is specifically in related to kind of the way government delivers tech, is that they are trying to involve the users more in a feedback process so that they can start understanding further how their services are affecting their citizens, and then hopefully improve them. And a key part to that is the tech provider itself. So it has mm-hmm. to be set up in a way to both get that input from the government, provide that service to the user, but then also get that input back to the government of how it is it's affecting the user. And so we're seeing kind of, to a certain extent, a sea change in the way that governments across the United States are approaching these citizen services. And that's a good thing, because, as you said earlier, it really reflects the reality of the way that we deal with technology today, which is that it's not this linear sequential relationship where it's just a one and done business. It's very much about kind of these open marketplaces to a certain extent, these cycles where users are both customers and also providers of services, and that's obviously where the economy is going. So why not the government as well?
Okay. So what does the average city government have to do to start enabling a lot of these features?
Right. So I think this really goes back a lot to kind of to a certain extent the way that companies, the private industry has evolved in the past few decades. So they went from these very sloth-like organizations to something that theoretically is a bit more agile, that has really created these agile design techniques and cycles within the organizations themselves. And that's really, I think, the first part for governments is for them to look at their processes, look at their RFP process, this request for proposal process that puts out a request for proposal for a service that's very kind of linear to a certain extent, and look at how they can reform those processes, look at how they can pull their more linear thinking to a more agile and cyclical perspective. So that's part number one is process.
Okay. So you worked at a place before. You don't have to discuss it, but what new technologies are out there that are going to help those processors come into place? I mean, is it cameras? Is it sensors? I think one of the points that you made in your post is that cheap sensors around a city are going to solve a lot of the problems, right?
Right. So, right, exactly. And so the entire kind of what agile process relies upon, the entire kind of point of it is that it ingests data about how something is being used and then continually improves upon that data. So that's what agile methodology, sort of agile approaches to building things requires. It is a lot of data about how people use things. And for cities, for a very long time, they had a very hard time getting a lot of continuous data about that. But as you and I both know, that we're witnessing a sea change in the way that people sense things in the world. So right now, every single person is carrying around a sensor in their pocket, which is their phone. But cities themselves are also adding sensors on top of their infrastructure that are connected and 24/7 and providing data to them on anything from water usage to traffic to noise pollution to air pollution. So all of these sensors, all of this data should theoretically help us build the smarter city that we all hear about and read about in only the optimistic sci-fi and futurist fiction. It should, all of this data should help us create that sort of future. But what we're seeing today is that, okay, you have all of this data, but we need to create processes. We need to create a decision-making structure. Even something as simple as a contract structure that really recognizes that the cities themselves are fluid, and so maybe our processes should be a bit more flexible and fluid as well. And that's kind of the sort of stuff that we're seeing out there today in terms of cities, which is very heartening to me, that cities are realizing that they have this massive opportunity to kind of gird themselves for what the future will look like, and many of them are tackling it head on.
So, I mean, I guess the question here, can a city, I suspect maybe a city like, gosh, I don't even know what the example would be, maybe like a New York or maybe an SF, would be able to start using some of these tools. They're fairly well funded from a tax base perspective, and they have a fairly vibrant technological community.
Mm-hmm.
But what about, I don't know, Scranton or Allentown or Detroit? What are those guys going to do to get the benefits of this sort of stuff?
Right. So to a certain extent, it's actually, so even though cities like New York and San Francisco, LA, are all embracing this smart future to a certain extent, and are often the best position to take advantage of new technology because of their resources, they also have a severe disadvantage in that they are large, and that they have massive bureaucracies, very entrenched interests. And we see that often, most recently in the case of Uber and Lyft and all mm-hmm. these ride sharing services, right? So it's the larger places, I should say, generally, where you have kind of the bigger fights, where you have these entrenched taxi interests who are fighting against these new competitors and this new technology. And so to a certain extent, the big cities are adopting this at what they think is a rapid pace, which to you and me might seem very glacial. And so I think that that also kind of opens up the smaller cities to a lot of opportunities, because these tech companies who are developing this technology that wants to gather data in cities in real time constantly, and then work with cities and businesses and private citizens on making the city better through that data, these smaller cities can take advantage of that because these tech companies want to move faster and the smaller cities can. And so even though they don't have the same resources, they can use their speed and agility to their advantage.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. All right. So what does it take? What's it going to take for the average person to start encouraging their cities or their mayor or whoever to start using these tools? If you live in a city that's a little more, a little less technologically advanced, I guess you could say.
Right. Great question. I think that's already happened a bit. So you have a lot of different organizations out there that are urging cities to adopt more agile approaches to citizen services. And they've become a movement, really, in the way that we want to build our cities. And so there are a few out there. There's one called Code for America, which is the one that I talked about in these Medium posts, is this national umbrella organization that's really pioneering how cities can take their sclerotic, slow processes and move them into the 21st century. And so they have a fellowship function where they'll send technologists to cities, developers, designers, thinkers of how to do agile process, and embed them in a department to change them. So that's one way. But from an individual citizen perspective, they also have these volunteer brigades where they are on the ground in the city, unpaid volunteers who try to a certain extent make a little bit of a ruckus. So they're activists, but also are often developers or data scientists who attempt to create applications that show cities what it is they can accomplish if they have more data, and if it's more real time, and if it's more granular. And I think those are often the conversation setters, because if you have someone in a small town who's able to show that the parking inventory in that city is being used really inefficiently, mm-hmm. I think a lot of people will pay attention, because that's all taxpayer dollars, and also parking, which is one of the most annoying things in a city. So those are often the ways I think that cities' eyes get open to this sort of technology. And the term that many people use for that is called civic hacking, and which I there's something about that term that I just love. But it's really what you'll find in these cities that have a lot of civic hackers are nerds like you and me, mm-hmm. or at least myself, and who care a lot about their cities. And that also is a big change from, I think, a few decades ago, where you would have a lot of software developers who were really leery of involving themselves in government, involving themselves in kind of this messy and slow moving organization. And now you have people who grew up with civic activism in mind, but also learned how to code and think about data, who now really want to change their surroundings through the means that they have, which is this coding and data.
Interesting. So it's a generation that initially was, well, I mean, I guess if you were looking at it from a 1990s perspective, fighting City Hall, quote unquote, was not a popular thing. But now there's not actually even a fight, because the folks who grew up in the 90s are now parts of City Hall, and they're actually trying to get they understand entrepreneurship, they understand technology, they understand growth,
right?
All the benefits of a tech-based society are available to them. Interesting.
Right, and companies like Uber, whether intentionally or not, have spurred this. I think to a degree, at least, this increase in civic activism within the tech community, because they come out with something that is just so patently, at least to the tech community's perspective, better. Right, mm-hmm. This ride-hailing service, and all of a sudden they see that really it's politics, it's civic activism that is holding back adoption of something that is, to their knowledge and their experience, just a much better service. And so I think a lot of people saw that and see that and say, okay, well, maybe I should start playing that game a little bit. And that's where you see a lot of interesting things happen.
Okay. So what's next? What do you think is next for a city like New York? What do you think is, what's the biggest change that's going to come over the next 5 or 10 years?
Right. Well, one of the things that's happening right now, actually, is if you come to New York and you expect to see a really dirty and unused phone booth, you don't see that at all anymore. Mm-hmm. Or you won't see that at all.
No, my son usually finds the dirty and unused right. phone booths, and he takes the phone and puts it up to his ear. So we've so.
Well, so I hope you have a lot of sanitizer on you.
Exactly.
Whenever you walk around. But in the next few years, you're not really going to have that problem per se, because all of those phone booths are going to be replaced by these tall, sleek, shiny towers that have ads, yes, and display them on these really nice crystal clear displays. But also that provide really, really fast Wi-Fi to the streets. So I think that is one of the first and most important steps that New York is taking to become this smarter city and deploy sensors throughout, because really what you need is infrastructure, right? And that's really what city governments can provide, is kind of hardware on the street level that that entrepreneurs and incumbents alike can hang sensors upon. But to do that, you really need a connected city. And so I think that in the next 5 to 10 years, that's what you're going to see cities doing. And a lot of cities have already started pursuing that. And so even though you'll have this Wi-Fi network that's available to you and me, there's probably going to be a second one that's available to all the sensors around. And there will be a process to install your sensor throughout the city, first on a small level to test the efficacy of what it is that you're measuring and whether or not it actually improves what you say it'll improve. and then to a wider scale if it actually is effective. And so I think that's the first step. And then the second step is really taking that data and thinking about the things that we assume are really just set in stone for cities to change them and to improve them. So obviously self-driving cars and traffic and parking are all the rage these days, but think about noise pollution codes or building codes that are basically designed around the idea of noise pollution and how you want to build your neighborhood. So we might find ourselves in a future in 10 years where every apartment has a noise pollution detector, and that all gets fed into a city. And so when a bar wants to open below my apartment, it doesn't become this contentious discussion. It becomes, okay, well, we have all of these sensors, so we know whether or not you'll be making noise. And so you have to build your bar and operate in a way where our sensors don't detect that noise. So to a certain extent, the building codes and the noise codes and all of these different things, these regulatory processes that govern cities, will become more flexible, but also much more enforceable. And depending on which side of the equation you sit on, the optimist, which is the side that we sit on today, or the pessimist, this is either a really good or a really bad thing.
All right, very cool. So where can people find out more about what you're working on?
I never thought I would say this, but I think my Medium is a safe place to do that. So it's at David Fine.
At David Fine on Medium. Yep. So you're posting more of your future of cities right up on Medium for now.
Yeah, I'll be posting that and also on Twitter. Same handle at David Fine. Very easy.
All right, very cool. David, thanks for joining us on Technotopia. I'm John Biggs. We will see you next week.
Thank you, John.